You're listening to Community Radio WERU-FM, 89.9 Blue Hill, and streaming live at weru.org and on our app. Stay tuned for a Democracy Forum special.
You are listening to a discussion held on Saturday, September 28th at the Moore Center in Ellsworth, sponsored by the League of Women Voters Down East. Our guests were Maine Secretary of State Shenna Bellows, Joanne Bautista, Deputy Secretary of State Policy Advisor, and Bangor City Clerk Lisa Goodwin. We were there to discuss voting rights and the integrity of elections in Maine. I'm Ann Luther, and I moderated the discussion.
Shenna, I'm sorry to say, has COVID and is joining us by Zoom instead of in person, but known to you all very well, Shenna Bellows, Maine's Secretary of State. With us in person are Joanne Bautista, the Deputy Secretary and Policy Advisor, and also Lisa Goodwin, who is the City Clerk in Bangor. And we're here today to talk about elections in Maine and why we have the best elections in the country, maybe in the world. And so with that introduction, let me ask Shenna to say a few words of introduction.
Good morning and or good afternoon. And I'm sorry that I can't be with you in person, but I'm delighted to be part of this forum because I think it is so important. So thank you to the League of Women Voters for hosting. We have one of the most experienced and best clerks in the state. I mean, all the clerks are amazing, but Lisa Goodwin of Bangor is particularly spectacular in terms of the work that she does, especially the work she does engaging young people and making sure our elections are free, safe, and secure. And of course, my wonderful deputy, Joanne Bautista, who traveled to my hometown of Ellsworth from Portland today, quite a drive, although a scenic one. And she's getting to see, of course, the best part of the state. Don't tell me, Ann Chester, that I said that. We are so fortunate in Maine. We have a long, proud tradition of free, safe, and secure elections, and there is no doubt in my mind, and actually both I and the Maine GOP chair, Joel Stekas, were quoted in the paper last weekend as saying, we both have confidence that our elections will be free, safe, and secure in November, which is really, I think, a testament to the checks and balances that have been constructed in Maine law over time, the diligence of clerks like Lisa, and the strength of our democracy. So I'm going to give you three things that I think make our elections free, safe, and secure. I'm going to kick it to Deputy Bautista to share a little bit about the preparations we've been making specific to 2024. And then I look forward to this conversation. So number one, if you don't remember anything else in this forum, the number one foundational strength of our elections is the paper ballot. We have paper ballots, and that allows us to do recounts, which we often do in Maine, and to perform post-election audits. It is the foundation of the security of our elections. Number two, those high-speed tabulators that you see in Ellsworth and Bangor, and quite frankly, most municipalities across the state, they're hardened machines. What does that mean in layperson's terms? They are never connected to the internet. The only cord you will see is the power cord. That means they can't be hacked by cyber criminals or foreign adversaries seeking to change the election results. And third, our systems entail careful tracking of every registered voter and every ballot that's cast, as well as voter participation history. And there are myriad reviews in the certification process that ensure the integrity of the vote. I'm gonna stop there, but I look forward to this conversation. I think it's extraordinarily important. In 2022, Maine was number one in the nation in voter participation per capita. More Mainers turned out to vote than any other state in the nation. Let's be number one again in 2024.
Go ahead, Joanne. I think to you.
Yeah, I'll just follow up briefly by adding on to the four pillars of elections. So as Secretary Bellows mentioned, the fact that we are trying to uphold free, safe, secure, and fair elections here. I just want to touch on the safe part of the elections preparation. So I'll touch on three things that we're doing in preparation for November 2024. Only, I think we're at 30 something days, Secretary Bellows. It's coming up really quickly. So one of the things that we're doing to prepare for November is increasing our collaboration with partners. So we're talking about federal partners, we're talking about law enforcement at the local and state level here, we're talking about our collaboration with the Attorney General's office, with other state agencies like the Maine Emergency Management Agency. Because one of our priorities is to ensure the safety of everyone on election day and on the days after. No one should be afraid when they go to their polling place that something will happen. The other thing that we are doing in preparation is a ton of training with our clerks. And maybe Lisa can talk more about her experience and her perspective of that. So we have done de-escalation training with the clerks. We've done cybersecurity summits. We've done a tabletop exercise, which is basically walking through a bunch of different hypothetical situations that could happen. We're hoping don't, but could happen on election day. So what are the processes that you have in place right now to respond to any sort of emerging situation that could come up? What are your communication processes? So we just want to give our clerks as many tools as possible so that they feel prepared for election day. And the last thing that I'll touch on is that actually, I don't think a lot of people know about this, but we, in the last couple of elections, have been part of a situation room on election day. And so it is kind of what you would imagine in the movies. There are screens everywhere. I represent the Secretary of State in that room on behalf of the department, and I'm there with a member of our information services team. We have FBI there, agents from the Department of Homeland Security. We have the Maine Emergency Management Agency. We have connections to the Maine State Police. Again, this goes back to the first piece of like building strong relationships and open lines of communication. Again, we're monitoring on a bunch of different channels election day. So in order to keep everyone safe. So those are just a couple of things, and we can go into more detail about that, but I'll turn it over to Lisa.
Okay, so they gave you four pillars. I'm going to add just one more, and that is the local officials in all of your communities, mm-hmm. the election workers from both parties. Yeah. There are checks and balances going on all the time with that. So I think importantly that we do have this training with the Secretary of State's office. We also train individually with just the clerks. We have an informal meeting. It's called the School of Hard Knocks. And it's just seasoned clerks who get together on Zoom with other clerks, and we answer the questions that they have. We give them tips and tricks on how to get things done and how to do things properly. So there are many, many things that we do as clerks behind the scenes to train our workers and make sure that everything is free, fair, and very safe for mm-hmm. everybody.
Mm-hmm. You and I were just talking before this thing went live about estimating how many like Maine citizens do you think between the clerk's office and the full-time employees and the part-time employees and the wardens and the deputy wardens and the election clerks and the deputy registrars, like, how many ordinary people do you think actually participate on election day?
Yeah, well, we were talking about that, and we're thinking at least around 2,000 or more people that are involved in some way. And I would include in that, you know, you also have your poll watchers
right.
that come in, and they're part of the process. The league is part of the process. Mm-hmm. You know, all of us together make sure that everything is done correctly.
So, I mean, that's a lot of people that are involved, and that's like just ordinary people. That's us and our neighbors that are there on election day watching what happens and pretty directly involved in the election process. I mean, these are professionally run, but they're also citizen run mm-hmm. elections in the very best sense of the word, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Yeah,
I agree.
Talk a little bit about our good election laws, you know, about how you know, everybody can vote, but nobody can vote who can't vote and wants mm-hmm. to take that one.
Okay, I can start and then I'll pass it over to Secretary Bellows. So we have a really great history of our legislature supporting voters' access to the ballot box. Over the last couple of years, we've seen the legislature pass online voter registration. So now anyone can, well, if you're an eligible voter, you can go online and register to vote. We have absentee ballot tracking. So if you request your absentee ballot, you can track it every step of the way. You can see when your clerk receives it to when it's counted. We also have same day voter registration. So we try to make it as easy as possible here in our state to make sure that as many people who are eligible to vote can vote. Secretary Bellows, do you want to add any other success?
Yeah, no, I think that you nailed the accessibility. And I think that is such a hallmark of our state. Maine is one of only two states in the nation, Maine and Vermont, where every citizen who is a resident of the state of Maine has the right to vote, no exceptions. And I think that's really important. But one of my colleagues, Secretary of State from the other side of the aisle nationally, likes to say, all of us do everything that we can to make it easy to vote and hard to cheat. And I think it's important to know from a security perspective, foundationally, first are the laws around voter registration. So sometimes people say, why don't we have voter ID in Maine? We require proof of identity and proof of residency at the point of registration. Our local registrars in all the towns and cities are reviewing that to their satisfaction. And that, regardless of whether you're registering to vote online at maine.gov/vote, or whether you're registering to vote in person any day, including up to Election Day, or at the Bureau of Motor Vehicles, which we now do, you have to demonstrate that proof of identity and that proof of residency in some form. And second, we get a lot of questions from members of the public about the integrity of our elections, and we're often going back to quote the law. So Title 21A is Maine's election laws. And fortunately, because we have a citizen legislature, it is written, parts of it are written in such a way that it's pretty easy to understand. And that's where you see those provisions that Lisa touched on. For example, the fact that our elections are fully transparent, that virtually every step of the process, poll watchers can be there, representatives from the campaigns and the parties can be there. For example, I mentioned that machines earlier, all the rules and regulations are in the law, and we perform what's called logic and accuracy tests. And those tests at the local, we do it at the state level, and we do it at the local level. And at the local level in the municipalities, those are open to members of the public or members of the party to observe. When those absentee ballot envelopes are opened, it's not a clerk in the back room. We post under the law, the municipalities post when that's going to happen so that the parties can attend, inspect the envelopes for themselves, and watch that process of absentee ballot processing. And then, of course, on Election Day, and Lisa already mentioned this, under Title 21A, the clerks recruit equally from both major political parties, Democrats and Republicans. So just as Anne said, it literally is our friends and neighbors running the elections. And it might be 2,000 people, but it might be more. I was trying to think about, you know, in your average city or state, and you multiply that by 500 municipalities. If you count both our staff and our volunteer election workers on Election Day, we might be talking about more than 5,000. Just guessing. This would be a fun exercise if we had the time, right?
But I mean, that's interesting. We were talking earlier also because Ruth had the question about radical transparency and the extent to which, like, are you getting more requests to watch different pieces of the process?
Yes. Well, the testing of the tabulators, this year we have received a request for that, and clerks throughout the state have, and never before has anybody ever asked to watch us do that. It's a pretty boring process. But if they want to come watch us and see the paint dry, that's fine. And it's always open. We don't mind. You know, we just have to make provisions for, like in Bangor, we have to have a room large enough to accommodate the 24 machines that we have, plus the people that want to watch. So it's just more logistics for us trying to schedule time to have a room, because I've scheduled a room for 2 days so that we can get all of those tested, because it does take a little while to test a machine, because we have to load the election into it. And then we have test ballots that we run through, and then we close the polls for that test. And we have to verify that everything matches, that if we put 10 ballots in, we have 10 votes and they are in the right spots. So we have to test every single thing on there, the write-ins, all of that has to be tested.
And then last year I was with you when, well, not last year, 2 years ago, I guess, you had people observing the absentee ballot process. Mm-hmm. And that was a little watching paint dry, but still there were a lot of people watching.
Yes, we had, I think there were 12 people that came to want to inspect our ballots. So they get an hour before we start the process to go through and look at those envelopes. I mean, they can't look at the ballots themselves. Mm-hmm. They can only look at the envelopes. The idea behind that is if they see somebody that they think, well, this person doesn't live at that address, they could challenge that when I read their name off. They could challenge it just like they do on election day. So, but they do have to be a resident of the community to do that.
You're listening to a Democracy Forum special on WERU-FM.
And has anyone who's observed ever found any like foul play or anything?
They have not found any foul play, even though they have challenged. They do challenge. They'll say that they're not a resident. And
I mean, I saw one challenge when I was, you know, observing the observers, they challenged on handwriting or something.
Yeah, there was one that the person literally just makes a line across. And when I got that back, because we verify all of the ballots when they come back in the envelopes, and I questioned that same signature out of thousands of ballots that we both picked the same one, because it just looked like somebody put a line on there. But I went back and looked at the voter registration card, and they matched. So I was able, when they challenged that, to tell them that is their signature.
And can we talk about the challenge process for a minute, Anne? Because I think this is a really important thing for people to understand.
I say this all the time. Maine has the best world-class challenge ballot law in the country. Nobody else does it like we do, and it is so good. So go ahead. Yeah,
I completely agree with you. And it's been in place for a long time, and it works. And I think that's what's really important for people to understand. So in Maine, you have to be a resident of the community, and you have to have specific knowledge that the individual that you're challenging is not a lawful voter for some reason. Perhaps you're challenging the signature, perhaps you're challenging the residence. You see someone and you're like, this person lives in this other place. Perhaps you're challenging citizenship. Whatever you're challenging, you're welcome to do that if you are a challenger, but you have to have an actual basis. You can't just challenge all of the voters who are female, or all of the voters who have a funny last name like Bellows. That is really important. And you do have to be a resident of the community. So people can't come in from other places and be like, oh, yeah, we don't want anyone named Luther to be voting in Orono, right? And so then also, when a vote is challenged, and Lisa can speak to this, but the ballot itself is marked as a challenged ballot. And the presumption is that it counts. So, it, you know, say hypothetically, you know, you voted absentee, and you might be wondering, oh my goodness, there's going to be a group of people looking at the absentee ballot envelopes and challenging my ballot based on my signature. And perhaps your signature has changed over time. If your ballot were to be challenged, it is marked with a number. It's marked as a challenged ballot, but it continues to go through the process. If the number of challenged ballots would change the outcome of the election, so say there were 6 challenged ballots and the winner won by 5, then you would have that review one by one on those challenged ballots and the qualifications of the voters. And in that process itself, lawyers from the political parties, from the candidates, are all involved in that process. So Anne, I don't know if you want to elucidate, because quite frankly, you were involved in crafting some of the laws over the decades with challenge ballots, or Lisa, if you want to talk about what it looks like on the ground. But I do think that the requirement that people can't just come in and challenge thousands of ballots, and the requirement that people have a basis, a very good reason to do so, and the presumption that the ballot is counted, but if it were to change the outcome of the vote, you have that safeguard of going back and reviewing those on one by one basis.
I mean, I just think the best part about that is when we as advocates can say, if you're eligible to vote, a resident of your community, 18 years old, a citizen of the United States, if you're eligible to vote, you cannot be denied. Even if you have to vote a challenged ballot, the presumption is that your vote counts. Yeah. And the challenge, the burden is on the challenger to prove mm-hmm. that you're discounted, which I just think is exemplary, really. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Joanne.
Yeah. Oh, well, actually, I'll turn it over to Lisa to talk about the on the ground.
Well, I'm going to give you an example of something that happened a few years ago. Had a gentleman come in, and this protects the voters. Yeah. Right? This law helps to protect the voters. Mm-hmm. He came in to vote on the voting list. It already had an AV for absentee voter beside his name. And he said, I have not voted absentee. So the warden called me over, and I went and I looked on the voting list, and there was another gentleman with the same exact name mm-hmm. as his. Different address, but same name. But he hadn't come in to vote. Mm. So I said, what I am assuming is, if you say you have not voted absentee, that this gentleman did vote absentee, and the wrong name was selected in the CVR program, the Central Voter Registration Program, when they printed off his labels for his record. So I did the challenge for him. I said, we're just going to challenge this. And I explained the whole process of, you know, this would only come into play if there was a close race. I said, after the election, I can open up those envelopes. Because once we take the ballots out of the envelopes, we have to seal those up. So they have to stay sealed for 5 days after the election. So I told him, after the election, I will go find that envelope and we will determine what has happened. We will follow up on it. So I took his number. We challenged his ballot. He was happy. He voted. After the election, I went and I found the envelope, looked up the other person's signature, and it was his. Mm-hmm. So that's exactly what happened.
Right.
So he wasn't disenfranchised by us saying, nope, sorry, you voted absentee. We just did the challenge process with him. He was able to vote. We could mark the incoming voting list. So.
Yeah.
So it works.
It's great.
Yeah. It's like you said, Lisa, and like many of our election laws, they are pro voter because we want to do everything we can to ensure no one gets turned away on election day. You will get to cast a ballot.
Just recapitulating our pre-program conversation, but you were talking about how all the checks and balances and the numbers all had to tally up, and like the next day you're going to, oops, we missed one. Mm-hmm. Talk about that experience too, because I think it's so important for people to realize that it all has to tie out.
Yeah. Back in 2020, we had a lot of ballots, and we had 13,000 absentees. Wow. And so we had a lot of the memory sticks that we had. And what happens is we process those ballots ahead of time. Those memory sticks are locked up. And it was at the end of the night, after we've done the actual election day ballots, we have to take those sticks, put them into the machine, and run those tallies. One of the state sticks did not get run, which I won't know until the next day after the warden has given me all of the information. So as I am tallying things up, I'm off. I have this certain number that I'm off. And in my head, I'm saying that number rings a bell with me. When we did our early processing, because we had so many machines processing, I had made a spreadsheet and I had on that every single machine number, how many votes were on each machine, And I narrowed it right down to just machine number six. As machine's number six stick didn't get counted. Mm. So the first thing I do is call Julie Flynn, the Secretary of State. And she's like, oh, no. So what we do then, we call the political parties and we say, hey, this is what happened. We're going to run this stick at this time. Everybody's welcome to come watch this and see the process and watch us tally these votes because it's supposed to be a public process. And that's what we did. We found it. Those were the numbers I was off and everything was good.
Can I add one thing, Lisa? When you said you counted the number of votes in each machine, you don't know yet who has voted for which candidates. You just Correct. Know the number of ballots, the number of votes cast for particular races.
Yeah. There's a number on each machine that says that there were 100 ballots in this machine. So that 100 goes on my spreadsheet that machine number six had 100 ballots. And so if I'm 100 ballots off, the number's going to ring a bell with me that, yeah. Okay, that was in one of those machines. And I'll go back and say, okay, there were 100 on that. Because when we total things out at the night, we want it to be 100. We don't want it to be 101. Mm-hmm. So we make sure that we know at the end of all of that absentee processing that those numbers on that machine, and we have to report that to the state too, the numbers on each machine.
And that's part of the process, isn't it, Julie or Joanne, about certifying the election results is to make sure, you know, everything is all tallying up at the end of the day, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Secretary Bellis, you want to talk about the certification process?
So on election night, under Maine law, the results are posted in the polling place. And of course, again, the parties can be present while the count is happening after the polls close at 8 p.m. on election day, and often are. When I was a state senator running for re-election, I would always send volunteers for my campaign to all of the towns that I represented to watch the count. And then they would text the results back to me. So when you hear the results on election night from the Bangor Daily News or the Portland Press Herald, it's because the clerks or the wardens have voluntarily put those reporters on a list of people that they're sending their results out to on election night. But Maine doesn't have official election night reporting like some states do, where the wardens or clerks have to enter the data in to a central system immediately. Instead, they have those printed tallies that you see, the warden's tally. Then the clerks have 2 business days following the election to go back and do just what Lisa described, and that is check the results and make sure that everything matches up. And they certify the election to us for their municipality, and they enter it into the central voter registration system. Then we have 21 days from election day to go and look at all of the municipalities, ensure that we have those results, ensure that those results match the number of voters, those sorts of things. And then we certify the election to the governor. Now, in those 21 days, sometimes there's a recount. In fact, because Maine has such a fair redistricting process, our districts tend to be very purple. We often have recounts. I think virtually every election cycle, we have very close races in some of the legislative races. And so we do those recounts in that 21-day period. And sometimes we'll have ranked choice voting tabulation, especially in Congressional District 2. We've seen that now. And so that also happens in the following week and as part of that certification process. But I think it's really important to recognize that there are eyes on those numbers at different points. And people are signing, you know, the warden, the clerk, and the state are all signing off on that certification. And that the state level check allows us to see any potential anomalies. So if the numbers are off, and this happened, you know, Lisa, your story is very similar to things that have happened in municipalities and other races, or even in 2020. I know in the town of Hudson, there was a forgotten box of absentee ballots that we needed to provide permission to go back and open up that box and in full view of the, again, open everything back up and in full view of the parties, run the numbers. And the numbers didn't change the outcomes in that particular municipality that had been reported on election day, but it did change the specifics of the numbers. And so we work really hard for accuracy. And, you know, people are human, poll workers, clerks, wardens, they're putting in long days around the elections. And the point is that a typo might happen. Something might be missed in the moment, but there are safeguards, there are checks and balances that require going back and tying those numbers out and checking those numbers, just like in accounting and finance, right? I think some of the election, like the best election workers would make extraordinary accountants because they're really good at counting and they're really good at making sure things match up.
So what are you hearing? Like, I know you track false claims about elections. What are the sort of rumors or misinformation that you're hearing and tracking about how elections are conducted in Maine?
Yeah, well, I can start. And then I know Secretary Bellows can fill in or add more color to what I'm about to say. I think one of the biggest pieces of misinformation that we've been hearing is this false rumor that we are registering non-citizens to vote here in Maine. That is just simply not happening. And as Secretary Bellows mentioned, there are a number of checks and balances to ensure that that doesn't happen. The other thing that we've heard, not this election, but like that there are people being bused in from Massachusetts to vote. That, again, hasn't happened in Maine, or that, a clerk or somebody is stuffing a Dropbox with a bunch of absentee ballots. Like, that also can't happen because each ballot corresponds to a voter. There is a barcode on the absentee ballot that has someone's name on it that's scanned into our central voter registration system. So if there would be even one more ballot than was issued by the clerk knows how many absentee ballots have gone out. And if there's even one more, like an extra one, it will be found. But Secretary Bellows, any other rumors or really bad information that's gone around? Those are just the ones that kind of come to mind for me.
No, I think you really highlighted the top three, but I'd like to touch on the absentee ballot process for a minute, because this is one that pops up its ugly head every now and again. So the ultimate security in the absentee ballot process is the absentee ballot return envelope. Mm-hmm. What prohibits people from just photocopying ballots and stuffing them in the absentee ballot drop box outside of City Hall? The fact that every ballot needs to be in that absentee ballot return envelope that has the voter information on it that corresponds to a valid request that the clerk has issued. And you can verify that. And in fact, the parties do. They do what's called absentee ballot chase. You can verify that because we have an absentee ballot tracking system. So when the clerk gets an absentee ballot request, and you can request those absentee ballots online through our online absentee ballot request system, you can call the clerk if you're a registered voter, you can go down to City Hall, you can mail in an application for an absentee ballot. So when that clerk gets that request, they're entering it into the central voter registration system. So you can see in that tracking system that the request has been received. And then when the clerk issues the ballot, it'll go out to the voter. The voter, you know, you can fill out your ballot any way you want. It's not a test. You can do some homework. You can listen to candidate forums. You can look at candidate guides or the referendum guide. We have a citizen referendum guide on the Secretary of State's website for the ballot questions that will be on the second ballot this year. You fill that out. In this year, you're going to be filling out two statewide ballots. You put those in the absentee ballot return envelope, and you either mail it back through the Postal Service, drop it off in person, drop it off at the absentee ballot drop box. And when the clerk receives it, the clerk is making a notation in the system that the absentee ballot has been received. And then when those ballots are processed, the clerk is noting whether the ballot has been accepted or rejected. So the voter can look in the absentee ballot tracking system and say, oh, okay, you know, my request has been received, or, oh, good, my ballot's been received and it's been accepted. Yay, you're done. Or you can look in that system and say, oh gosh, where, you know, I put it in the mail a week ago, where is it? And it gives you that measure of confidence. But I mentioned the parties, right? So we, through the Central Voter Registration System, we are the Secretary of State's office statewide, compiles an anonymized list right out of the system that we post on our website twice a week. It's all of the absentee ballot requests in the state and the returns. So which ballots have been requested and which ballots have been returned. Campaigns and parties use that in a number of ways. They can use it to chase down their voters. They're like, oh, you know, so-and-so has requested a ballot. We know they're voting for my candidate. We got to make sure that ballot gets back. And that's very common. Campaigns can also use it to check the status of the voters. So again, I think Joanne is exactly right. The biggest lie that we're seeing this year is the idea that non-citizens are voting in our elections. The parties could look at that list, do their own research, and make any determination. Like if there was someone that they saw that they didn't think was a legitimate voter in a particular town, they would see that. And again, the parties also see, okay, you know, is my party or my candidate or more of my voters requesting ballots or fewer of my voters requesting ballots? So that is a public source of information, and we update it twice a week now. So anybody can take a look at it. Anybody can see who's voting absentee and can analyze who those voters are. Lisa, do you want to talk about, you know, on the ground, like what you see from your perspective, since you're the one that's doing the work? We're just uploading spreadsheets.
And it's a lot of work. So with those absentee ballots, if somebody isn't coming into our office and voting in front of us and putting it in the envelope, they all have an application. Mm-hmm. And when those, to add to what she has said, when those ballots come back to us, we have to match that envelope up with that application, and it's attached to it, so that if they have signed that, you can easily see their signatures. You can't, so with the electronic ones, because that's just, there's no signature on there, but everything is all matched up. I mean, and there is a long process. You know, when somebody calls on the telephone to request one, we have to fill that application out. All of those are filed in a file, and we have to go find them. And when you had in 2020, when we had 13,000, wow, sometimes that was a feat. When somebody misfiled something, it could take us hours to find them. It's labor intensive to do it, but it works. And there's always those checks and balances. That's why I can go find things. When there's something that's gone wrong, I can usually find it within one of the boxes of ballots if there's something that's happened that's wrong. If somebody's application gets hooked to somebody else's, I'm going to find it when we do our final process on those absentees. Yeah. Because once they come in and we verify that, yes, they have the signature, if there's an aide, there's a witness, we have to verify all of that information on that envelope. Then we put that application with it, and we do batches. And with those batches, we run a report. For Monday, we had 100 ballots that came in. We will run that report, and then we actually sit, two of us, we read off the names, we check it off the list to make sure that everybody that list says voted, we actually have an absentee ballot for them. And so then when it comes time to processing, we take that same list and we check it again to make sure that every person on that list still has an envelope there, and we process it through.
I was watching The Watchers 2 years ago, right? And, you know, you were pulling those things out, and the envelope was with the ballot still sealed in it, was attached to the application. Mm-hmm. And so, like, what you're saying is that you can't actually have more envelopes than applications.
You can have more envelopes because some people vote in person.
Oh, yeah.
So okay, they're voting in person. But if you look at our list, it will say in person.
Right, right, right.
So we know that it doesn't need to have an application because they voted in our presence.
But that's what Shannon was saying earlier. Somebody can't just copy those envelopes
no.
and stuff.
No.
Ballots in them and, you know. No,
that's not going to happen because they won't be on our list.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And so we have those checks and balances. There's no way that's going to happen.
Go ahead,
Jen. And for the voter, it's really important. You've got to return your ballot in that envelope. You have to seal that envelope and sign it. You can't just drop your ballot off in the absentee ballot drop box and recycle that envelope. Because if you do, those any loose ballots, and this happened, and I think it was in 2022, the Postal Service called us and said, we have a ballot with no envelope. What do we do with it? And we said, nothing, you know, shred it, recycle it. We do not accept any ballots that are not in an envelope and a verified, and it can't just be a manila envelope. So you got to put it back in that absentee ballot return envelope and seal that inside.
Something I will add, sometimes people make mistakes on their ballots at home. They'll call us. And we can issue up to two additional times to that voter But we go into the system when we reject that first ballot, and we issue a second one. Mm-hmm. And on that envelope, we write second ballot.
Right.
So that when it comes back, if miraculously they found the first one, if the first one comes back, that second one comes back, we're not going to accept it.
Right.
We're only going to accept one envelope from that person. Mm-hmm.
This is a Democracy Forum special on WERU-FM.
All right, I think I've done the questions that I had. I think it's time to open it to the floor. Carol.
I'm wondering what happens to ballots that arrive in the post office after the post office closes at 5 o'clock, but before they can get it there by 8 o'clock. But if it's not in your hands by 8 o'clock that night, it doesn't count. So does the post office, or can you call the post office and say, do you have any ballots there between 5 and 8?
We don't call the post office. We're too busy to call the post office.
Right.
But sometimes the Postal Service will hand deliver them to us after 5 o'clock.
They will.
They don't always, but sometimes they do. And sometimes we get a bunch the day after the election and we have to reject those ones.
I hear you.
I will just add to this. We have been increasingly concerned by the actions of the Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy. The changes that have been made to the Postal Service, and I know Down East residents are very familiar with some of the efforts to close the Hamden facility. Now they're not closing it, but they're reducing some of the operations happening out of it. And I think we have heard lots of stories of seniors not getting prescriptions in a timely way, people not getting their bills on time, Social Security checks not arriving on time. And I think that is a result of really abysmal leadership at the top. And I'm going to be really candid about it because we've raised these concerns. I'm going on my fourth year in office, and secretaries of state across the country from all parties have been in ongoing conversations with the Postal Service about our concerns now for several years, and we haven't seen improvements. But what we do see in Maine, and I just want to say a huge shout out, is some extraordinary postal workers in our state and some local leadership among our postal workers who are really committed to ensuring timely delivery of the ballot. So we do see just what Lisa described, is sometimes postal workers will do that sweep. We have regular conversations right before the election with the Postal Service here in Maine, and we request that they do that. We see town postal workers seeing ballots come in and sending them right back to the town office instead of sending them out to Hamden or Scarborough or elsewhere to be processed and delayed. But I think for the voter, I think it's about making your plan. So if you're planning to vote absentee, get your request in now so you can get that ballot soon. You can take your time, complete it, and return it in a timely way if you're planning to use the Postal Service. Because I think the reality is changes in terms of staffing, training, and the delivery processes have all reduced the timeliness of mail delivery. I'm going to be on a call with secretaries of state from across the country next week with the Postmaster General. The Maine City and Town Clerks Association joined all 50 secretaries and local election officials and county election officials from across the country in sending the Postmaster General a letter detailing our concerns and urging that they do extraordinary procedures to make sure that nationwide these mail ballots get back in a timely way. We haven't been satisfied yet with the response that has come from them. Perhaps there will be some movement next week. Of course, this is an ongoing issue. It's not just an issue in Maine. But I think the key for the voters, the power that you have, is to make your plan. And if you're voting absentee, make that plan to complete your ballot early and get it back in a timely way. And if for some reason you're getting that absentee ballot the Friday or the Saturday or the Monday before Election Day, maybe you return it to the absentee ballot drop box instead, or return it in person instead. And I hate giving that advice. It rankles that we don't have that next day delivery that we enjoyed when I was a kid growing up in Hancock, when we passed the law that Thursday is the day that you can request an absentee ballot, that was because, and I say we, but I mean the legislature before me, that was in part because if you requested an absentee ballot on the Thursday prior to election day, if the clerk got that request and processed it on Friday, you knew you were going to get your ballot by Saturday. And if you put it back in the mail by Monday, it was going to get back to the clerk by Tuesday. So part of the thinking behind that law was to ensure that those absentee ballots would get back. That may happen sometimes. And again, it's kudos to the Maine postal workers, but it won't always happen.
Mm-hmm. But the drop boxes are emptied at 8 o'clock, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So that's, if you're desperate, that's the place to put it.
Yep.
Yeah. It's Anne, right? Did you have a question?
Reverting to supposed illegal voting, I am newly here from Virginia. And in recent years, Virginia has put in every polling place a prominent sticker on the door saying, it is illegal to vote if you are not registered, and that it cites the law. It is important to warn people who are not voters, don't do this. It's serious. If you're thinking of voting when you know you're not registered. But I have had the feeling that it was repelling more voters. It was really intimidating legitimate voters far more than those signs were warning people not to vote if they shouldn't. Mm-hmm. So what does Maine do to let voters know that it's serious to vote if you're not supposed to? It happens so little, but I do worry about repelling legitimate voters.
Please, you go, Shanna.
First and foremost, if someone votes illegally, they will be caught, they will be prosecuted, and it is a felony. And in Maine, there were two cases of two individuals voting twice, and they were caught and they were prosecuted. In Maine, when you register to vote, you have to affirm that you're a United States citizen. That is on the voter registration card. But one thing that makes Maine special, I think this is part of the reason why we see such consistently high voter participation, is that we don't have a registration deadline like Virginia. You can register to vote on election day. So if you go to the polling place and your name is not on a list because you're not registered, they will point you to the voter registration table so that you can go and register to vote and then cast your ballot. And if you can't satisfy that proof of identity and residency, then that ballot's going to be challenged. And you're going to have to resolve that with the clerk. And Lisa can speak to those procedures about how it works on the ground. I think to your point, that is never a sign that I would want to see on Maine polling places, because the checks and balances are in the system so that people who do wrong will be caught and will be prosecuted. And in terms of the consequences, I think it's like so many laws in our state, right? You have to follow the laws of the state. So I do a lot of public outreach. I recently did a forum hosted by the Maine Immigrants' Rights Coalition. And I said very plainly, if you're not a citizen, if you're not a United States citizen who is naturalized, then you don't have the right to vote. And it is a felony and it's a deportable offense. And I think some of that public outreach is useful because it helps people understand what their rights are and are not. But I agree that there are some states that some of their actions may have the result, may have the impact, whether it's intended or not, of deterring lawful people from voting.
Anybody else have a question? Well, Mary Lou, you go first.
Yeah. We're talking about the lies that go around. I've been working as a temporary clerk. This is a rumor that was going around, and this was in 2022, that there were only 800, or I'm making that number up, 800 registered voters, but there were 1,200 votes that were put in. And I'm thinking, that couldn't happen. that's right. Just not physically possible. You know? So, but that's the kind of thing that goes, and I heard it several times
from different people. Of course, the numbers got inflated or changed, whatever. But this rumor that these townships were getting many more votes than they had people in them.
Yeah. And I think that kind of just shows or points to the bigger picture about like where people are getting their information from.
Uh-huh. Probably not the best to get your information from like Facebook or X or formerly known as Twitter. And you should encourage others, and you yourself should be seeking out information from trusted sources, like directly from our website or from nonpartisan groups like the League of Women Voters.
Or in this case, call up the clerk and say, what about that? Somebody told me that. It can't be true.
Yeah. But also, I think it also shows like not only like how harmful rumors and falsehoods and misinformation can be, not just to like the election and process and democracy, but also like if you're saying that a clerk, whoever, you're basically disparaging the clerk and all of the election workers in that office too.
Can I just add to that? You can look online. You can look on the secretary's website. You can see the voting results for every election historically. We just sent them over to some academics. We've got them going back decades. You can see how many people voted. And you can check that against the population of those municipalities. So it is a lie, but it is a lie that it would take 2 seconds to check from a trusted source. So you don't even have, I think Anne's point is delightful. And I think Joanne nailed it. It's misinformation, disinformation, and malinformation. And some of it is being promoted. And this sounds like a conspiracy, but it's not. You know, there are foreign adversaries. The feds just are prosecuting individuals and outlets who were hired, funded by the Russian government to spread lies about elections online to break our confidence in our greatest strength, which is our democracy. So sorry to get a little fired up, but you can look on our website.
All right, go back to you, Ruth. Go ahead.
You made reference earlier to the training that goes on for the clerks. And I think that's very important. Could you just speak a little bit more about what's involved in when the training takes place, you know, what the range of topics is and how that happens? I think that, you know, I know our town clerk pretty well, and she's extremely careful about everything. I know she's anxious about finding ways of accommodating people who want to watch. A new set of people who want to watch, I think, is the problem. It's not the people who have all along been participating as observers, but there's a new set of people that is trying to arrange, and she's just trying to figure out logistics and all like that. But she's nervous, and I think was hoping there might be some guidance from the state, further guidance from the state. So if you could just speak about all the range of training for the clerks in terms of this election stuff, that'll be interesting.
Yeah, I can start, and then we'll go to Secretary Bellows, and I would love to hear your perspective, Lisa. So we've done a number of trainings every single year for the clerks. We've done cybersecurity summits, which covers the topics of hygiene, cyber hygiene 101, the importance of, you know, using a proper email or when conducting your clerk duties. And we have also done a number of virtual and in-person de-escalation trainings, which is the unfortunate reality of the time that we're in right now, where people are just very amped up when they are going to their town office on or around election day. So those de-escalation trainings give clerks techniques on how to de-escalate or approach someone who is in a heightened sense of heightened state, you know, whatever that may be. It could be mental health issues. It could be a number of things. So that's the de-escalation training. We've also done, like I said, actually this year was the first time we did a Maine specific tabletop exercise, which ran through a fake election day and like the day leading up to election, where what if all of the things that you thought could go wrong did go wrong. You know, like, and the situations ran like a gamut of a range of different things. So what do you do if someone's posting online that they're going to do something horrible at the polling place on election day? How do you handle social media posts like that? Who do you contact? How do you alert the Secretary of State? What is the Secretary of State going to do to support you? And the other scenario was like, what do you do if there's a mob outside of your polling place on election day? You know, God forbid that does happen in Maine. You know, we saw it happening in Arizona in 2020 and other states. So that was the tabletop exercise. The elections division, so Julie Flynn, who oversees our elections division, also sends so many mailings to the clerks with very detailed guidance on how to do a number of different things, which I don't even know. Like, I barely know the surface of like all these mailings that Julie sends, but there's so much guidance that's provided to clerks. And, you know, we're also just available anytime the clerks have a question about what to do with, you know, new observers who want to come for the first time who've never observed before. I think we actually do we've issued poll watcher guidance in the past and have done and are doing it again this year. So
that would be like to bolster the warden and or the clerk to say, poll watchers are permitted to do this, that, and the other thing.
Yes, yeah.
But if they're doing this and being disruptive, you can
tell them you have the authority.
So the Maine Town and City Clerks Association partners with the Secretary of State's office, and we have a two-day training. First day is voter registration. So everything from A to Z on voter registration is covered on that day. The next day is the Title 21A for municipal clerks, the conduct of elections, everything we need to do step by step on all of that. That is a mandatory training for all clerks, and they have to take it every 2 years. Mm-hmm. So we are required by law to take that training.
Yeah.
And it is taught also with a clerk that is seasoned in the position along with Julie. So not only are they getting the law, but the practicality of how we actually do it will come from the clerk that is helping to teach. So for an example, with something that Liz may be experiencing is the request to watch us test our machines this year. That is totally new. Nobody's ever asked us to do that. And many communities are being asked to have somebody there to watch. So the first thing I did, I have never in 33 years had anybody want to watch. So I sent a message to Julie and said, Julie, this is happening. Can you give us some guidance? Because what the clerks want is uniformity.
Yeah.
I want to be doing the same thing that Brewer's doing, Bar Harbor, Portland. We all want to do it the same way. Because if we don't, that's when problems start.
Yeah, right.
And that's when the rumors start that, well, in Bangor, they're doing this.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So we always turn to the state and say, give us the guidance. And they provide it for us.
Yeah. Go ahead, Shannon. Wrap us up.
So I love the idea of bringing flowers to your poll workers. And I think one of the things, you know, I was on a panel with an experienced clerk a couple of years ago, and she was talking about, she said, you know, when I first started out, and this was over a couple of decades ago, she said, people would bring me pies on election day. So my message to everybody is to echo Deputy Bautista, bring your best selves, bring kindness, a smile, respect, politeness, and I don't know, bring a pie, bring some flowers, show your love for our local election officials, because the heart, the backbone of election security in our state are the hardworking city and town clerks all across our state. So I'm excited. I just want to remind everybody, we were number one in 2022. Let's be number one in voter participation in 2024. I don't care how you vote. I don't care if it's absentee or in person. I don't care what party, what candidates. Just make your plan. Make sure that you're registered or get registered and vote. Thank you.
All right. Hear, hear.
You've been listening to a conversation sponsored by the League of Women Voters Down East, recorded on Saturday, September 28th at the Moore Center in Ellsworth, talking about voting rights and the integrity of elections in Maine. Our guests were Maine Secretary of State Shannon Bellows, Joanne Bautista, Deputy Secretary of State Policy Advisor, and Bangor City Clerk Lisa Goodwin. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to a WERU Democracy Forum special produced by Ann Luther and Linda Washburn. I'm Amy Brown. Have a great day and keep it tuned here to Community Radio WERU-FM.